building. Now, save Guta.
Save Guta. That was the plea of a child whose home was destroyed in an airstrike late last month in eastern Ghouta. It's an enclave of almost 400,000 people east of Damascus in Syria. I'm Todd Zwillick, and this is The Takeaway. That child's cry for help comes from a city under siege, recorded by the BBC. Mortars and airstrikes from Syrian government forces rain down on civilians in eastern Ghouta. The government says they're trying to oust opposition fighters who've controlled the region since 2013. Since the most recent campaign began last month, hundreds have been killed in the fighting. But violence is nothing new. Residents have been hostages in their own city for 5 years. Dr. Mohammed Katoub has lived that experience. He's a dentist, born in eastern Ghouta. He raised his family there, but everything changed after the uprising. Dr. Katoub recently published a report on the plight of eastern Ghouta for the Syrian American Medical Society. And he spoke with me at the end of last week from the border town of Gaziantep in Turkey.
Eastern Ghouta is just 10 kilometers away from the capital. It's the food basket where there are a lot of agriculture, and the highway taking to the north. Also, Eastern Ghouta is a wealthy area where there are many factories, many industries inside this area with big population. Now it's 400,000 people, but in 2010 it was over 1 million. This area became, in 2013, completely under siege and had been suffering from the siege and its consequences since that time.
Now, you left in 2014 for Turkey, where you are now. What were conditions like when you left?
Ghouta that time was under siege since 7 or 8 months, where there is no food, there is no medicines. This area had the highest rate of malnutrition since the beginning of the crisis in Syria. The issue is winter, because heating is very difficult, especially there is no fuel. And when it's found that it's not affordable, like 1 liter of diesel is about $10 to $12 that time. And people started to use alternatives like the boot for heating and for cooking. But at the end, you need the fuel to run the electric generators, at least for the hospitals, at least to run the incubators, at least for the intensive care unit, for the ventilators for the patients to keep alive. And for also transportation and just to deliver food from one place to another, just for the bakeries, just for ambulances to work. It was too hard to get fuel that time. And we lost many lives because of shortage of medicines or basic needs. Day after day, the people started to find alternatives from the local resources or smuggling. People started to dig tunnels. The tunnels were connecting Ghouta with other non-government areas, which is not under siege. It was not easy. It was under high taxes, and people had to pay much more than the prices of the same items in Damascus, just 10 kilometers away. But in a way or another, people could find resources to survive. In 2017, all of this was blocked. The government seized those areas, which was the resources of those items, and then the whole area became under complete siege. No one could get in and out. We started to lose our capacity as medical staff working there. My colleagues who work there started to block some services because they don't have the supplies. We started to have a bigger number of people who need to be treated outside. Even many of them can be treated inside Ghouta if we have the access. And we started to seek for medical evacuation for those people, which is not ideal, because medical evacuation for 100, 200, 300, and then what? And even those hundreds of people who need the evacuation couldn't find a way to be treated outside of Ghouta. The list now is over 1,000 patients who need to be evacuated. This morning, I received news about patients number 27 who die from this list, but this is not the whole suffering.
Well, how many doctors are left to treat the people of eastern Ghouta?
There are only 107. It's one doctor for 3,600 people. when suddenly you receive 100 injuries because an airstrike targeted a market or a mosque or a school or even a hospital, you receive this big number of people in the emergency room, and then you have only one vascular surgeon in the whole area, only one cubby from this very important, very precious specialties in war zones. And then from those 100, you might have 7 or 8 or 9, I don't know, it depends on how the injuries looks like, people who need vascular surgeries. Of course, there are medical standards where the doctors will use to make the priorities for such situations. But when you have also shortage of medicines, then you have to choose who to live to who to die. And basically, they choose the cases which have the high chances to survive. And it's not only about injuries. It's about many other diseases. I know a kid who is the same age of my child, Faris. They were born in the same month, and they go up together. Those two kids were sharing toys, they were sharing even the limited food that we had that time. And me and his father are friends, so sometimes even when we were lucky to find one bag of diapers for the kids, we were sharing it for the two kids. And this boy, his name is Osama, needed antiviral, which is available in every pharmacy in Damascus, just 10 kilometers away. And we couldn't secure the antiviral for him. This happened last September, and I'm here in Turkey, helpless, can't help him. And the father, the friend, was calling me to tell me, please do anything to help. I was pushing the ICRC, please bring the medicine to Osama. And the convoy of the UN entered the same month, and they were not allowed to bring specialized medicines, only things for primary health care. And Osama passed away after 9 days in the intensive care unit. The Syrian government is putting obstacles in front of those convoys to bring the needed items, especially those medical supplies. And the recent one, which entered just 2 days ago, the WHO announced that 70% of life-saving items were removed from the convoy before it entered Eastern Ghouta. Since the beginning of 2017, I'm talking about 15 months now, only 11 convoys entered Ghouta, bringing less than 10% of the needs.
Dr. Katoub, you also describe skyrocketing rates of infectious diseases like typhoid, and you mentioned chemical attack. There have been reports of chemical attack in Eastern Ghouta. Can you describe what types of symptoms doctors are seeing that can be attributed to chemical attack, what the evidence is that the government is attacking civilians in this way?
Chemical attacks is not something new in Syria, not something new in Ghouta. This is the area where the chemical massacre in August 21st, 2013 happened. Since the beginning of this year, we reported 9 chemical attacks in Syria. 6 of them were in Ghouta. The doctors depends on describing the symptoms. And after this long experience with 198 attacks in Syria, doctors developed their capacity and they received many trainings on this. In this area, they were receiving trainings online from experts outside to just verify and identify the symptoms. But in the same time, they don't have the lab tests to identify the chemical agent, like it's serine or it's mustard gas or it's any other type of phosphorus compounds. But it's very clear when it comes to even if it's chlorine or it's phosphorus compounds, because the nerval symptoms will not appear in the people who are exposed to chlorine. How we know that this is the Syrian government? It's not us who is saying the Syrian government is doing this. It's the joint investigation mechanism of the UN Security Council. 7 reports came from this joint investigation mechanism, which is combined between UN experts and experts from the Organization of Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. And they investigated those attacks. And in 7 reports, they talked about the usage of chemical weapons by the Syrian government. And they proved it. And when it comes to us, we know because mostly it's aerial bombardment, and the opposition don't have any air forces.
Dr. Katoub, I'd like to end with a little bit of your own story. You mentioned your own escape in 2014 with your family in the dead of night. Can you talk a little bit more about that night and how you and your family got to safety?
Well, in 2014, after about 7 or 8 months of the siege. We couldn't be anymore. It's because of the little child, Faris, who was less than 1 year at that time. When we left, he was almost 1 year old. We couldn't find medicines for him. If I'm the doctor who work in logistics for hospitals, can't find medicines for my children, can't find diapers for my child. So how about other people? So we decided at that time to leave just for the future of the children. My wife could go through the checkpoints. We could pay some money for the checkpoints to allow her out of Ghouta. But for me, they told me that it's too risky. And I know that many of my colleagues who work in humanitarian aid were tortured to death in the Syrian government prisons just because they work as humanitarian workers in the opposition areas. So it was too dangerous to go through the government areas to flee out of the country. So I fled May the 6th in 2014. I worked for 2 nights. It was too dangerous to work during the day. So during the day, we were hiding in some place. We were avoiding to go through mines. There were snipers along the way. Even in some places, there were cameras. The guide who leaded this, only 5 people who escaped, was an expert on the road, so he could avoid all of this. But 2 days before I left, 3 people died in the same way because of the mines. So it took almost about 20 days to Turkey to meet my wife and child here in Istanbul.
Before I let you go, Dr. Katoub, in a sentence or two, what is your message for the world, for listeners who are hearing your description of what's going on in Eastern Ghouta and what's going on in Syria right now?
Unfortunately, it's the governments who are failing us, who are watching war crimes day after day in Ghouta. And as you started, it's even much worse than Aleppo, because there were hundreds of reports and hundreds of statements from UN officials and governments talking about Aleppo and that this will not happen again. This is the area in Ghouta, this is the area of the red lines of Obama in 2013. And it's a red lines of Macron again now. It's the same area where chemical weapons are used again and again. So there is no red lines in this world. People around the world will definitely defend humanity in any place, but it's all about governments who are failing us.
Dr. Mohammed Katoub, Advocacy Manager for Turkey for the Syrian American Medical Society. Dr. Katoub, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.